Welcome to Design, Innovation, and You, a podcast for innovators, entrepreneurs, and design enthusiasts looking to create a better tomorrow. I'm your host, Lavanya Aneja, and this is an initiative powered by Qblue. I want to welcome our audience to DIY, Design, Innovation, and You. Today we have with us a very, very special guest, Mr. Sharif Moghrabi, who's the lead innovation coach at Winnowave, powered by SAP. We also have with us the founder of QEI India and Qblue, Nabiyuk Mohanot. Today we have with us a conversation about design thinking, positive psychology, mindsets, and a synthesis of tools that go beyond just the design thinking methodology and business tools as well. So I'm very excited to have this conversation. Welcome, Nabiyuk and Sharif.
Hello. Good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you listen, or good evening, depending on where you're listening from in the world. Thank you very much. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you, Sharif. And thank you, Lavanya. Once again, welcome to the Design Innovation in You podcast, Sharif. And we're delighted to have you and thank you for taking the time off. Sharif, I read in one of your articles, and this is a line that I love and I have used before and think about also. And this was a 2018 article, The Coach as Design Thinker. And you say there, and you talked about what are the stories you tell yourself about yourself. So I'm going to ask you, what are the stories you tell yourself about yourself? Tell us a little bit more about Sharif.
Well, first of all, thank you for referencing that article, because the process of writing that article was actually quite a liberating experience, because it was me coming from my purely kind of like ICF co-active coaching model, really being immersed in, embodying a coaching mindset. I think I tell myself empowering stories. And I tell myself empowering stories about potential, about possibility, about gratitude, about, creation, about design, about development, about transformation. Those are the stories I tell myself. And I'm only human. We all do get caught up sometimes in our own battles, our own little mental struggles. And I think, I hope that I've reached a level of self-awareness that I can quickly call myself out on those and realize that I'm not empowering myself. I'm actually debilitating, right? Yeah. So I think, yes, I try as much as I can to build certain routines in my life that allow me to tell stories that, one, validate the accomplishments and the victories that I have on a day-to-day basis, because we all have these mini victories, right? But right. Also paint a picture of potential and possibility for a future that excites me.
So how did you get into this? And you've come from broadcasting, communication, studies at film school, being a coach. Was it an epiphany? How did you finally get to being the design thinker and the creative confidence coach? How did that happen?
It's been a fantastic journey. So I think it's pretty rooted in knowing my purpose. When I was doing my own self-development work, I reached a point where I realized that one has to define their purpose. So, after kind of like, I would say, flirting with a few, I realized that it's around empowering creative and positive change. So I was trying to summarize it and trying to kind of like trim it until I was like, okay, what am I doing? I'm empowering creative and positive change. So I'm, my studies in communication and also in psychology and in film and in storytelling and in music as well, because I'm a musician as well. There's a way for you to be able to express these stories that I think we as human beings, we all share the same human condition, right? So we all, when you watch a movie or you hear a poem or something, it resonates regardless of which culture you're in or which country you're from. But after spending about 20 years in media, I realized that perhaps that wasn't necessarily the the right platform that I could use to be able to really make a positive change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm really lucky that I found Winnovate and I found SAP, because at the very core of SAP is really the concept of helping the world run better and improving people's lives, right? Mm-hmm. And at the very core of Winnovate is this idea of how do we enable people and give them the confidence to innovate, right? That's really at the very core of the DNA of Winnovate. So after I did my coaching studies and after I got exposed to a lot of these modalities and started to actually become much more proficient in being able to do public speaking and training and coaching and so on, it's really about a feeling, right? I felt that, wow, this is it. Like, this is really a powerful space to be in. And I think seeing that and being able to kind of like facilitate people in that towards, you know, that outcome, that shared outcome, mm-hmm. is something that I think resonates very much with this purpose of empowering creative and positive change.
You know, moving forward, and you talk of positive change, empowering creative and positive change, which has become, you know, the essence of what you are doing and what you find meaning in. I had the good fortune of listening to Martin Seligman myself.
Lucky man. He's a fantastic human being.
Yes. And, you know, and he was starting out then, actually, and he was talking about his story of how for years he was studying suffering and illness and disease. And he decided that he would now try to study and make sense of, you know, the flourishing human being, and happiness. So Sharif, tell us for our listeners a little bit about what is positive psychology and the interplay that you saw and how that's helped you to be a better design thinker.
That's great. So I think at the very core of it, positive psychology is the science of well-being, right? It's the science of really getting a better understanding and I think accepting the fact that human beings need, you know, connection and need relationships and need positive emotions and need meaning and need a sense of achievement. So how do we develop these frameworks that allow people to consciously or intentionally to create these fields of positive emotion and help them really help them flourish, like you were saying. You know, I started working in organizations at the age of 19, right? So I've got more than 25 years of experience, or even more, in corporate culture. So I think I at a very young age, I witnessed the detrimental effect of toxicity, mm-hmm. of negativity, of abuse, of lack of harmony, of all of the things that we try not to do, right? And I saw it again and again, people, you know, talent leaving organizations or even organizations shutting down because leadership did not have the awareness or the foresight. You know, I remember one of the powerful courses I took was a course with IDEO called Leading for Creativity. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, really powerful in the sense that they talk about these three roles that the leader needs to play, right? So the first role, you know, he's like an explorer. He's coming in with a very curious mindset, asking these powerful questions that shape culture, right? And then he goes into like this gardener who nurtures the team and really creates rituals and allows the culture to thrive. And then he leads as a coach where he practices something known as ambidextrous leadership, where sometimes, you know, sometimes you gotta be, of course, democratic but sometimes you have to take the difficult decisions. Right. So coming from all of that and being witnessing, you know, what not to do, how do we create a culture? And we've even run workshops where the design challenge is how might we create a culture that basically champions this concept of well-being, right? So, right. So when we synthesize the concepts so let's take an example from positive psychology, right? Right. So I'm pretty sure you know the concept of the PERMA model.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So if we break down the PERMA model, which is this model of well-being that can also be applied in the workplace, yes. You've got P for positive emotions, E for engagement, which is using the strengths and finding flow, R for building these connections and really building these positive relationships, M for meaning, and A for a sense of achievement. So any one of these wedges, any one of these segments, we can dive in and we can basically ask, you know, we can build personas of employees and mm-hmm. find out what their pain points are. We might do a journey map around, mm-hmm. you know, the experience of the employee and then ask the question of, you know, how might we generate positive emotions in the workplace, right? Mm-hmm. And as an outcome of that design challenge, we can then look at certain things that come out, maybe rituals or processes that we can then basically, you know, validate. So I think the synthesis of having an understanding of what it is to create a culture that does flourish, and then kind of like bring it in and apply it to the framework of design thinking, be it a design challenge or a persona, or even coming up with a value proposition that you test and validate, is a really, really powerful synthesis, I would say.
And I get that. Now, are design thinkers therefore happier, more flourishing people?
So look, I can't speak on behalf of all design thinkers. I really can't. Everybody champions positivity, right? So everybody says that, most people say it's very difficult for innovation to thrive in a toxic environment. As a facilitator or a leader or a coach, it is your response. You have a kind of a responsibility to continually, perpetually project that kind of energy. And people, whether you like it or not, people will look to you for certain cues.
Yes.
So if you're walking around the workshop with your head down and you're quite toxic and negative, I don't think that's really going to help with people being creative. But if you're playful and you're experimental and you have a sense of humor and you're light, I think that can enable people to be more creative. And that's definitely my experience.
I would agree. And, you know, and a corollary to that question is it the job of designers to create products and services which will make their end users happier and more engaged or satisfied? Is it the job of the designer to design to get a problem solved? Is it for them to worry about the happiness of its customers? Or is it for them to see that the company will get more adoption for the products and services and make more money? Where as a design thinker / designer would you place that? Is it our job to make the world a happier place?
Yeah. So I think I'll answer that on three different levels. Good design makes people happy, right? So let's put a full stop at that. So good design is seamless. It's kind of invisible. It is user-centric and viable and viable, desirable, and feasible by nature. I always like to use the example of a pencil, right? Yeah. So I think the pencil is probably one of the most incredibly designed things ever, right? It's amazing. It's for what it's supposed to do. It's just amazing, and you can sharpen it, and it's got that little eraser at the back, and you can, if you press a little harder, you know, you can create like, you know, deeper kind of marks. So I think using a pencil makes people happy. So whoever designed the pencil, now I don't know if he was thinking, you know, I want to design something that makes people happy, or he was solving the challenge of how do we create this portable instrument, writing instrument that can write in space, you know, when you don't have to spend millions and millions of dollars for NASA to create the space pen, right? So at the core of it, yes, I think that good design inherently improves people's lives, right? And as an outcome of improving people's lives, there is happiness and satisfaction. So let's put that to the side. Now, my role as a design coach and a design thinking facilitator, my role is only to facilitate the process. So as a coach, I'm not allowed, or I don't allow myself to actually be involved in the actual input of the workshop. My role is more on enablement, coaching, and facilitation than it is as a kind of a specific, as working as a designer. There have been situations where if the organization is working in a kind of co-creative process with a specific customer, a specific client, then they need to address the elements of desirability, viability, feasibility, right? Mm-hmm. And this concept of user adoption, for example, like you were saying, like if we were to use an example from one of our packet, like let's say at SAP, right? We might use design thinking, right, to help customers who are driving this S/4HANA, let's say, transformation. Because one, we help with user desirability, i.e. we're creating a product or a service that is desirable by users, but at the same time, the feasibility and viability are ticked off because those are the business, I would say, objectives of the organization. Simple and good design inherently improves people's lives, equals happiness. Yeah. Two, if you're a design thinking coach or a design thinking facilitator, you need to know, you know, what exactly your role is, whether it's an enablement or facilitation or coaching. Yeah. Three, in some cases, if you're brought into to kind of in a co-creative process where you're also kind of consulting and you're bringing in your own input, then you need to tick off the boxes of desirability, viability, and feasibility.
Facebook's an incredibly well-designed platform. And is it the job of the designers to worry about whether it's causing harm to society and to its users? And there's so much of study about how some of these platforms, very well designed, are creating harm.
Yeah.
And where at what point and how, you know, where does one draw that line, or are we supposed to follow the process and not bring judgment into this?
So one, I'm always big on trusting the process, right? So even when somebody in the middle of a workshop is like, why the hell are we doing this?
Yeah.
My take is always trusting the process, right? So my own personal point of view is it's really around your own perception of things, right? So a pencil can be used to create a sketch, and you can kill somebody with a pencil.
Yes.
Right? A mobile phone can be used for, you know, for trading stocks and for talking to your loved ones. And yeah. It can be used, you know, for terrorism. Right. Yeah. So I'm an advocate of really being aware of your own perceptions and knowing what you're focusing on, because this will be a little bit philosophical, but I think from a collective consciousness point of view and an energetic point of view, what we focus on, we enable.
You know, your pencil example is wonderful. The movie John Wick.
Okay.
It's a pencil and stabs the person in the neck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I didn't see that.
There is. So I guess as coaches and as designers, you know, we bring to the world in a very positive way. Now, there may be unintended consequences, but that's another story.
I'm just telling you my own personal point of view out of my own experiences that you can never control other people.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you don't know so somebody designed an IKEA chair, right? You don't know what somebody's going to do with that chair.
Right.
Right. So.
Right. And, you know, over a period of time, there are unintended consequences, but then again, in a very positive way, we go and address them.
So my take on social media is just a little bit more awareness, I think, and just becoming aware of our own habitual triggers, because of course it's super addictive, right? So I think just becoming having a bit more awareness on what triggers us and just being having that meta view and maybe just creating a bit more routine, a bit like routine in our lives where we're not constantly on. You know, you can allocate certain times of the day where we're on, and then we're off again. And I think that I know that that's quite an effective strategy for also dealing with when you're kind of being burned out by continually being online and getting like 1,000 emails every day and having your social media and all that stuff and WhatsApp and messaging. It just becomes overwhelming. So this idea of having these digital detoxes even throughout your day is a good idea.
Very much so. And I think that applies to all aspects of creation. What would be your advice to people, design thinkers especially, on being certified and to formally understand the coaching process? Has that helped your practice and how?
500%. So because I started off being certified as a coach and then doing the systemic coaching, which is the ORSC model, the organization relationship and system coaching. And then I got exposed to design thinking. And then that's where I wrote that article. So look, I think things like, I think about the ICF, it is the largest coach governing body in the world. And this idea of certification really enables you to keep your learning up to date, right? Plus, it like gives you access to this community. I mean, just recently, the ICF changed their competencies once more. But if you were to look at the competencies that are basically, I would say, championed by the ICF for coaching, right? And then you compare those with what are some of the requirements you need as a design thinking coach. So one, demonstrating an ethical practice, right? Two, embodying this coaching mindset of being open and curious and flexible and client-centered. Three, establishing and maintaining agreements, right? Four, cultivating trust and safety, maintaining presence, listening actively, evoking awareness, facilitating client growth. Like it's like everything that a design thinker needs to successfully facilitate or coach a specific design sprint. So I would definitely say that it's really, really powerful. Plus, when you get into this, the systemic coaching, which is basically the understanding that, they talk about there's a system that's different than working with the individual, and the system is complex, it's self-regulating, and you help to reveal the system to itself, right? So that's more on the ORSC side, which is the organizational relationship and system coaching. So a system it consists of the set of interdependent elements or players that have a common focus or identity. So it can only make you a better coach or a better design thinker if you have a better understanding of what does it mean to be a good coach from a co-active model, one-on-one, and then what does it mean to coach a system? It can only make you better. It can only add value to your teams and to your engagements.
Sharif, I 100% agree with you. And going through and understanding coaching formally can really inform and enrich the whole experience of design thinking and being and just the coaching presence, which is to be able to achieve meta level listening.
Yes.
And to see what is not being shown and to hear what is not being said.
Yes.
Is so much what as design thinking facilitators and coaches we're supposed to do. So now, given this, let's segue into and Sharif, tell us a little bit more about Vinnovate, which is powered by SAP, and how you're at Vinnovate bringing these multiple perspectives, tools, frameworks, mindsets to bear on assignments for your customers to create greater impact.
Sure. So. I mean, look, innovation has a really strong history at SAP, right? Especially design thinking. The journey started back in like 2004. Hasso Plattner, he's one of SAP's founder. He helped fund the first D school at Stanford, right? And then he brought 35 of these design thinkers into SAP to help make design thinking really a strategic priority, right? Driving innovation across the entire organization. So I think as an outcome of that, Winnovate, which was launched in the Middle East to really support the digital transformation agendas of local governments. Mm-hmm. Because basically, we realized that there's this skills gap between the requirements of the ecosystem as well, but the output, of the students. So there are certain programs that were created by the Training and Development Institute, like the Young Professional Program, as well as the Dual Study Program. And as an outcome of that, Winnovate was created to really help organizations transform challenges into opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And really give them the skill set for innovation by helping form this diverse and inclusive innovation culture. And it was also clear that, to thrive in the digital age, innovation is paramount, but it tends to be hard to get innovation right the first time around. It's pretty rare, right? Yeah. So how do we establish and foster these practices throughout the organization, and how do we improve the success rate? And I'm really, really proud and honored to be part of this initiative, because really in the last couple of years, we've helped organizations address business challenges. We've helped them co-create solutions and prototypes. We've enabled more than 5,000 people, Winnovators, we call them.
I see.
Both in person and remotely. We say, when somebody tells us, okay, give us your elevator pitch.
Yeah.
We empower you and your teams to co-create, validate, and implement innovative solutions that generate value for your stakeholders. Right. So if you think about it, we're co-creating, we're validating, we're implementing. We're helping you to learn the frameworks of innovation and the mindsets required to create this creative and agile workforce that builds the foundation for digital transformation. But also, because we're lucky to be part of SAP, and SAP has a long history around enabling the intelligent enterprise and so on, we basically also build prototypes for the intelligent enterprise. We allow our customers to experience these design cycles and test new business models and so on. So leveraging SAP's powerful technologies.
This is a standalone entity powered by SAP.
Yes, it's part of the Training and Development Institute. So our emails are SAP emails. And, our contracts are SAP contracts. But we created Winnovate as a kind of a brand within the Training and Development Institute. But it is part of the SAP ecosystem, yes.
That's interesting. And I would say that this is unique for the region because are there other Binovate equivalents around the world?
I think we are unique in the fact that we are an enablement arm, but we also leverage the power of the SAP ecosystem. So yes. I'll give you an example. So some of the things that we do internally, so some of the use cases we do, right? Yes. So let's say you have customers who are moving towards an S/4HANA or digital transformation, right? We might help them with customer adoption. Okay. Let's say people are doing things related to experience management, right? We might come in and support them with customer journey mapping, and we might come and support them with experience management. Let's say people are interested in learning a little bit more about the business technology platform, which is this technology layer that sits on top of the S/4HANA cloud layer. So we might come in and run design sprints that really help them create these mid-fidelity prototypes that leverage the technologies of the business technology platform, right? So there are a couple of use cases that we've done internally within SAP that leverage these powerful technologies, but we've also done stuff that's agnostic of SAP. So we've done engagements or design sprints that were purely around helping specific government entities create a more innovative culture. So where we brought in systemic coaching and positive psychology and design thinking to help them reveal the system to itself, to help them figure out, here are our pain points, here are the solutions we need to validate and test and here's what we need to roll out.
And we know that your votaries for this, our famous CEO Vishal Sikka, you would have read of him, who was with SAP in Germany, came back to head Infosys in India. And one of the first things he did was sent his top brass to the D school and then had 100,000 people trained on design thinking.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. So,
yeah. Can you tell us a little about how design thinking has helped SAP? Are there studies, metrics, ROI stuff, and A and B, how did it scale? How do you scale a culture of innovation?
Okay, design thinking has been very much at the core of the DNA of the SAP strategy, right? And we actually have a large amount of certified design thinking coaches that work in various areas of the organization to help generate value for the customers, right? Whether it's as a pre-sales function or a service function or a business technology business transformation function. So there are a lot of uses and a lot of applications of design thinking within the SAP landscape, for sure. And like I said, it's very, very much a part of the language or the taxonomy that we speak internally, be it customer-centric, customer centricity, being this concept of co-creation, being this idea of co-innovation. So all of those are very much part of our day-to-day within SAP.
That's the level of commitment.
For sure.
And I'm sure there's also not just the do good, but I'm sure there's ROI as well.
There is. So, I mean, I'll give you a specific example. I'll give you like a typical engagement model, right? So we might bring in some key, cross-pollinate some teams from a specific partner, a specific client that we already have a kind of a decent working relationship with. We might then kind of run a discovery workshop with them to get a better understanding and prioritize what some of their design challenges might be.
Right.
We might then bring them in and kind of run a 2-day or 3-day workshop where we really dive deep and go through a full design sprint that ends up in, let's say, 4 or 5 different prototypes, depending on the teams that we have. Right. And then, the SAP guys might come in, the solution architects, the data scientists might come in and take a look at those prototypes and then kind of like start to do some what's known as solution mapping, where we kind of like map some of our solutions to those prototypes, and we go back and we kind of play that back to the client. And there have been numerous examples where that has resulted in creating a win-win-win situation for the customer, for the customer's customer, of course, and for SAP, right? But primarily, the value in running those discovery workshops from the start is really creating that safe space for the client to be able to have a dialogue and to be able to unlock the potential of the team, whereas they would not have been able to do that if they hadn't been taken out of their normal working environment and been led by kind of an expert facilitator to take them through the process, to take them point A, point B, point C, point D, point E. And I tell you, every single time, everyone is kind of like really blown away at themselves by you see, you understand, oh my God, we were able to achieve this in 2 days.
Yes. You know, in conclusion, and I'm going to end by asking you, Sharif, you know, where does this go? Is this going to mutate into something else? Is it, you know, if you really had to take a step back, design thinking working, or will it evolve into another avatar, or what's not working, your views on where we are or where you think this will go 1 year, 5 years, 10 years?
I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I think it's only going to maybe amplify or kind of other disciplines are going to come in, whether it's the technology. So this whole idea of, I mean, you know, for the past six months now, we've been running these virtual workshops. So we've understood the power of technology to kind of like attenuate the process, right? So maybe obviously the hybrid concept of technology, whether it's not only for facilitation but also for prototyping, for testing, for empathy, you know data. So you know, I think SAP is also very, very big on this concept of, you know, how do we use both operational and experiential data to kind of like get insights on our user experience. So maybe I think that as we move forward, we might start to get more real-time access to that experience data that might give us maybe real-time insights that we might then have to validate with qualitative, right, or ethnography, but we maybe get a bit more insight, real-time insight into the experience of the customers, right? Okay. I also think that concepts of like storytelling and filmmaking and audio-video storytelling, I think, are going to amp up storyboarding and all that stuff, because those are really powerful ways to prototype, right? I would say that other modalities like positive psychology, like blue ocean strategy, like coaching, systemic coaching, other things that I think add value to the process, to the actual experience of the participants, I think that's going to kind of like get amped up a bit. And it's like, so design thinking will be used maybe primarily for discovery and exploration, but we might bring in other modalities like business modeling to test for viability. We might bring in other more powerful ideation techniques to kind of like push people to really kind of like go beyond first and second wave. We might also incorporate aspects of agile when we come into the actual implementation. So I think there's still a fragmentation, I would say.
Wonderful. So one, you said how we'll bring data into the equation.
Yes.
Which is important. Bring more technology into the process so that not only is it that are we doing this virtually, but maybe also using technology for prototyping,
for empathy, you know, empathy. For validation, right? For testing.
Yeah, and the world's going to demand that of design thinking, while it is going to be used in the front end of innovation for discovery, but will tightly knit with the other modalities. So it's a seamless progression.
Yeah, so it's more seamless. So maybe like you, maybe with coaching, with business model innovation, with agile, with other techniques as well. So there are a lot of other techniques. Yeah. So I think you know, moving towards a more holistic model. I think
more holistic. Agreed. Now this is very insightful, Sharif. Thank you very much. From design thinking to last question, what next for you? What's keeping you excited?
Yeah, so I'll tell you about one of my personal projects. So I'm an Egyptian, right? But I'm really, really kind of inspired by American blues and American music, right? So I'm working on a project now where it's kind of the songs are both in English and in Arabic. So it's kind of like a blues rock or a blues kind of genre. but it's fused with Arabic, maybe Arabic kind of like nuances.
Oh my goodness.
So you're going to hear the song and you're going to be understanding maybe 50% of it.
Right.
But the whole idea is because, yeah, so I'm creating that project, which is kind of a fusion project. That's keeping me excited. You know, I'm very, very grateful to be where I am as far as my role at Winnovate with my great team who are really supportive.
Yeah.
We're always pivoting. Like, we always practice what we preach, right?
Yeah.
So we're always looking at ways to kind of like continue to generate value, obviously, for the SAP ecosystem as well as our own partners and clients. But we're always kind of like self-reflective. Like, we're always saying, okay, what do we do next? Do we go global? You know, do we start delivering in German? Do we create all our training as videos that people, so we can scale and then, you know, so we're always looking at different ways that we can continue to generate value for our stakeholders.
No, wonderful to hear and very, very inspiring. And Sharif, you have to let us know when your music is done.
I will. Yes. I will. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being such a fantastic hosts.
Yes.
Thank you for the invitation to be on your inspirational show. I really appreciate it.
For more information on this topic, you can visit our website, www.q-glue.com, or write to us at customer_relations@q-glue.com. For more such thought-provoking content with industry leaders, follow us on social media and sign up for our newsletter to be in the know.